And welcome back to yet another week of High Heat, presented by FFLockerRoom.com. We'll go over all your hot, burning fantasy topics each week. And joining me, as usual, is the man, the myth, the legend, Jonathan Stolberg. John, how are we doing?
I'm doing great. Baseball season is upon us. We got through the college basketball tournament. I'm excited for baseball. Excited about my hockey, New York Rangers, but to me, baseball is my first love.
Baseball is running supreme. Although the one thing that really bothers me is most of those teams get that day number two off. That kills me, man.
Yeah, you wait so long.
You're going to give me one game, and then we're going to make you wait another day before we actually get into the baseball season. But today's that day. Well, as the time of us doing the podcast on a Wednesday night, that day is finally here where it's going to be day in, day out, baseball. Jumping right into it, why don't we talk about the first couple days of the season? Guy I want to bring up first straight away, just as kind of a pleasant surprise, or people that have impressed us over the first couple days of the season, particularly starting pitching. The first guy I wanted to talk about was Sonny Gray. 8 innings, didn't give up any runs. And he actually had a no-hitter going into the 8th inning. Now, Gray is one of the rising stars, obviously, for the Athletics. Last year, 219 innings. He had a 3.08 ERA. The guy was kind of a lockdown pitcher, goes ahead and gets the nod for the opening day start for the A's. What can we expect from Sonny Gray this year? And man, were you impressed the other night? It just being a masterful performance against the Rangers.
Yeah, first of all, I was very impressed by the performance. I thought he looked great. He was very much under control early in the season. You almost hate having your pitchers go deep into ball games and you know, running up pitch counts, but yeah. You can just tell by the way he was moving out there, and his release point was just solid. As far as what can we expect, I love Sonny Gray. I had him ranked as my 13th best pitcher. I was probably higher on him than most of the experts. I had him ahead of Shields and Harvey and Smarja and Ross and Teheran. I was looking for a good 15 wins, a low 3 ERA, about 3.2 or so, a whip under 1.2. And I was actually looking for him this year to really step up, and I had him for 200 strikeouts, which was about 15 strikeout bump from where you would normally see Sonny Gray. So I actually am expecting big things. I hate to pat myself on the back after one start, but so far so good.
Yeah, he certainly looks good right out of the gate. The next guy I want to talk about who's not really – I shouldn't say not really. He's not anywhere near as much of a surprise, if you even want to call Sonny Gray a surprise. And that's Max Scherzer. Comes out after the next big signing that could very well be, you know, a very scary one in the last 3 years of the deal, $210 million for 7 years for the Nationals. Comes out yesterday. He did give up 3 runs, 0 were earned, 7 2/3 innings. And again, you know, this is a lockdown guy coming on in here, getting ready to start the year with a new team. He looks good. He looks like the same Scherzer that we've seen over the last 3 years. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I thought he looked great. Like you said, you quoted the numbers, and, you know, they were unearned. You know, the thing that you're expecting, though, when he goes to the Nationals is you were expecting big win totals. And when he pitches that well and he's going against a guy that, you know, is old enough to be retired, even if he was a police officer. I mean, you could put 20 years on the force and retire, and you're the same age as Bartolo Colon, yet he's still mowing down the Nationals. That was a little disappointing to not see him get any run support. I mean, if it was a 2-2 game, 3-3, I could understand, but just to be completely outdueled by Colon was disappointing, but that's going to happen. I mean, he's probably going to have days where they win 8-5 also. He was my number 4 ranked starter. I expect big strikeouts that he gets to face the pitcher, over 250, low ERA, low whip, You know, the wins, to me, wins are the worst category in all of fantasy sports. You just can't really predict them. You know, you've got guys who give up six earned runs and get a win, and then Scherzer pitches brilliantly and doesn't. So that's why I sort of prefer a combination of wins and quality starts. If you can make those two combined into one category, that works best.
Yeah, and you mentioned Bartolo Colon. He also went in the same game, six innings, gave up one earned, only walked one guy, eight strikeouts, which I think was the nice surprise for Colon. Now, he's getting up there, 41 years old. Last year had, I guess you could say, his worst year since 2011. He had a 4.09 ERA. He had a lot of peripherals that had even worked in his favor. But 15 wins, 13 losses. Now he's got another year. What can we expect from him out of the Mets this year? I mean, how good can Colon actually be this year?
You know, I think we're to the point where we have to say, I honestly don't know. You're almost in uncharted territory. We've seen Randy Johnson, Roger Clemens, obviously we knew what was helping him out, although Colon's been suspended for the same transgressions. You know, Nolan Ryan, guys who are, you know, have that thick lower build, but Colon's isn't a thick lower build based on, you know, strength and healthy eating. His is a thick lower build based off of what you might see from, you know, the firehouse chef who bats clean. A high three ERA. He never really walks a lot of guys, so his whip is always going to be solid around 1.25, you know, 1.23 to 1.27. Obviously, the strikeouts were a shock. I only projected him for about 130 strikeouts this year, so to come out of the gate and strike out eight. To me, he's one of those guys that you grab just hoping to be like your fifth or sixth starter. If he has two or three more good starts like this, I would be looking to package him because he's 42. You have no idea when the end is going to come because at that age, it's not going to be a gradual decline. It's going to be he's good, he stinks that fast.
Yeah, and I am sorry if I missed any of it. I did cut out there for a second. But let's move along to the next guy who I really just want to reiterate here. Kyle Kendrick got the start for the Colorado Rockies on opening day last year. This is a guy who had a 4.61 ERA with an expected fielder independent pitching at 4.35. Doesn't strike out a ton of guys, has decent control, doesn't walk a bunch, but he gives up quite a few home runs. Now he's pitching for the Rockies, and he comes out yesterday, or a couple days ago, seven innings, none earned, no walks, six strikeouts. It just don't get too excited. Kendrick is not a fantasy option this year. Do you disagree with that?
No, I can't disagree with that. I mean, it's Colorado. It's early in the season. I have a hard time trusting a pitcher in Colorado unless he's an extreme sinker baller. Fastball slide. I mean, you know, Randy Johnson in his prime goes to Colorado. I'm not avoiding Randy Johnson, but this is Kyle Kendrick we're talking about. This is a guy that, unless you were in a deep NL only league, if you started him, you are just one of those lucky fantasy owners that no matter what you do the right thing. You forget to start Max Scherzer on a day he gives up nine. I mean, you're just one of those guys that everybody in the league hates. Kendrick is not somebody that I want to trust.
And, I mean, that doesn't seem like a good fit to me for the Rockies either because, I mean, it's a guy over his career has given up 1.12 home runs per nine innings. That's certainly not going to get any better pitching over in Colorado. Is there anyone that we didn't touch on that you wanted to talk about for a good surprising or maybe not surprising but just a you know an impressive first start of the year?
Well, I think one of the guys that you have to look at as a you know not necessarily a surprise, but was Dallas Keuchel. I mean, he's going against Corey Kluber. AL Cy Young Award winner. Indians are a much improved team. There's plenty of people predicting them to at least make some noise in that division. Most people think the White Sox and the Tigers are the class, but people think the Indians can hang around and make some noise and shut out three hits the Indians got all game. And it's not like Kluber was pitching a clunker. I mean, he was right there with them, giving up only two runs on three hits. In front of the home crowd, you know, Astros, I still can't get used to the fact that they're in the American League now. But I thought as good as Kluber looked, Keuchel looked better. I mean, there was one stretch, I think, that he struck out three guys in a row. He only ended up striking out like five or six for the game. But I happened to tune in while he was striking out those three guys in a row. And I was like, my God, like, you and I were preaching Keuchel last year, but the way he looked was even better than anything I had seen last year, and that's really promising.
Yeah, it sure is. Sure is. Let's move into some bad news. Some guys that disappointed rather than impressed. And the first guy I want to talk about, and I'm a little concerned over, is Kyle Loesch for the Milwaukee Brewers. Now, he's been solid for quite a few years now. He never really hit his stride until he entered his 30s. In the majors, you know, having bounced around for quite a few teams until then. He's hit his stride since 2011. He put four solid years in a row, got himself a nice contract with the Brewers. And now in the final year of that contract, it's off to a rocky start. Last, against Colorado, 3 1/3, 8 earned off of 10 hits, couple home runs. He only had one strikeout. He did not look incredibly sharp. I mean, he wasn't walking people, which is a good thing. But coming up at 36, and you and I both know pitchers tend to really go into plateaus. You know, they'll be at X production for 2 years, then they'll be at Z. Getting older, as Loesch is, he's 36 now, we know the plateau probably isn't going to go in an improving direction. But rather in a regression. My question to you is, how worried are you about his after his first start? Do you have the lid to the panic button open right now?
I don't know if I have the lid to the panic button open because I've never really been a big fan of Kyle Loesch. I had him ranked as my 72nd best starter. So in a 12 team league, he's your worst number six starter. So to me, he was not a guy that you were going to count on all that often. He's a guy you're going to stream. You're going to play him against the Phillies. You're going to play him, against some of the weaker teams. Against a pretty solid Colorado lineup, he was probably one of the guys that, you know, at least in a mixed league, I would have left him on the bench anyway. He's not going to get you many strikeouts. I have him for 135 strikeouts in 200 innings. You know, the whip is always nice. He doesn't really walk a lot of guys. The ERA, you know, it's a high 3.38, 3.39. You know, there's just nothing sexy about him. So, you know, I think obviously you're disappointed from the start, but I don't think he's a guy you're really expecting that much out of. I think he's one of those, if he can go seven and give up three runs, you know, at 3.86 ERA on average, you'll take that. And, you know, the hope as a Loesch owner is that the next time out, he goes seven and gives up one or two to sort of try to balance things out. But like I said, he's not a guy that you're really counting on to carry your staff. He's more innings eater, filler, really play the positive matchups.
Right. Right. Let's move on over to a pitcher who just joined a new team this year. That's Matt Latos for the Miami Marlins. He didn't even get out of the first inning. Going up against Atlanta, and I mean, keep in mind this isn't a lineup that really anybody is fearing, you know, coming into this year. In those 2/3 of the first inning that he managed to pitch, he had two walks and gave up seven earned off of six hits. Things didn't get off to a great start for Latos, who was injury riddled for a good half of last year. Anything to worry about here, or are we just going to let this one slide?
You know, I think for now you have to let this one slide. I mean, he's proven to be a very good pitcher as a Freddie Freeman and Andrelton Simmons owner. I want to say thank you, Matt Latos. I really appreciated the boost to my offensive stats early in the season. But you know, he's one of those guys that he's proven he can do it. The question is, are these injuries really taking its toll on him? You know, he's not a young 27. He's sort of an old 27 at this point because he's battled so much. I mean, some people will say, oh, he's a young 27 because of all the injuries. He hasn't logged big innings. To me, when it comes to pitchers, every injury ages you. So your age isn't always just about how many innings you've pitched. It's definitely a concern. I'm not going to bench him for it. To me, he was one of my top 40 starters coming in, and I'm not going to change that after one start. You know, he moves from a bad ballpark to a great ballpark in Miami. You just have to hope that maybe all of the injuries and the fact that he wasn't really throwing that much during spring training, that it was almost like one of his final spring training tune-up starts. It just happened to hurt you even more from a fantasy perspective because it was the regular season. So it's definitely something to keep your eyes on, but I'm not panicking after one start.
Yeah, I mean, 27 years old, doesn't have a ton of miles logged on that arm. I mean, I'm in the same boat. There's not a whole lot to worry about here. Really, we can expect something along the lines of what he put up with the Reds the last 3 years, right? He's got a career ERA of 3.4, expected fielder independent pitching of 3.65, strikes out over 8 per 9, walks under 3. I mean, this is there's no reason to expect anything different this year, right?
No, I mean, I'm expecting right at his league average. I mean, and his career average. I have him as I have a 3.42 ERA, a 1.21 WHIP, 163 strikeouts. You know, you can look at his expected fielding independent pitching, like you mentioned, but when he's going to a Miami team that has Hecavarria at shortstop, you're going to get a lot of good fielding plays behind you, and probably a lot better than he saw when he was with the Reds. So,
hey.
it's not a knock on the Reds. It's just that Hecavarria is really that good defensively, and the guy's a wizard with the glove. So that can only help Latos. You know, Yelich in the outfield, they've got a good solid team there. You know, there's no reason not to expect him to be the norm. This isn't an old guy like Loesch. Like I said earlier, the injuries are something to be concerned about, but not early in the season. I think once he gets in his groove, he'll be the Matt Latos that you expect.
Let's move on over to talk about Jeff Samardzija. Just started up with the Chicago White Sox this year. Now, another guy who got off to a rocky start. He did manage, unlike Matt Latos, he did manage to get through six innings, gave up five earned off of six hits. He gave up a homer, three walks, just one strikeout. Now, he's had, in my mind, Samardzija's had two very good years, and one other solid year. 2013 was not one of those years. Last year was on two different teams. I'm not sold on Jeff Samardzija. I mean, is there a reason that I would want him right now? Because I really don't. I mean, it's not necessarily just after the one start, but
I mean, Samardzija's a very good pitcher. He does all the things that you would normally want from a pitcher. I had him, I believe, 16th or 17th on my rankings. I think I actually had him one spot worse than the experts. So we were all pretty much in line. I mean, he's not overly sexy. You know, the 3.6 something ERA, the 1.21 WHIP that I have him for. He should strike out 200. To me, the thing that concerned me was the strikeouts. The fact that he only struck out one guy when he went that deep into the game, that's the one thing that you know, again, it's early in the season. I'm not going to panic. I really hate his home ballpark. You know, pitching in Chicago for the White Sox. You know, the concern that I have about my projection on his ERA is, you know, one or two of those routine pop-ups that turn into three-run homers, and that 3.65 becomes a 3.9, and that really changes everything. early in the season. I'm not worried about him. He's a top 20, top 25 starter. He was last year, especially after the trade. He was he was terrific. He's proven that he can do it in the American League. You just got to wait and see. To me, another situation where I'm not panicking. He's still just 30 years old, and I think he's got some pretty good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, by all accounts, it didn't sound like he looked like he was lacking anything in that first start. It's just I don't like what I see. I don't think anybody should feel any differently than they did coming into the year about Samardzija. I'll leave it at that. Before we move on to talk about some other topics, some injuries, contract talk, closers, what have you, what is there anybody else that you want to touch on that we didn't get a chance to?
Actually, there was one other guy that I wanted to mention, and that's Clay Buchholz. Okay. He actually pitched extremely well. Now, this is a guy that, a few years ago was the future ace for the Red Sox, assuming that they knew Lester would get away and stuff like that. And he's just, he really disappointed. And coming back from all the injuries, I had him pretty low on my list. I mean, I had him 85th as a starting pitcher. Even on a good Red Sox team, I predicted him for 11, 12 wins, 3.97 ERA, 1.28 WHIP. Not a guy that's going to have a whole lot of value. Like $3, $5, in an AL only league, but pretty much an end gamer in a mixed league. And after that one start, again, if I'm not going to panic with guys like Latos and Samardzija, I'm not going to jump Buchholz 30 spots on my rankings and say everybody should start him. He's a number three starter now. It was definitely interesting to see what he did. It was the Phillies, so again, you can't get that excited because I feel like I can go like one or two innings and only a couple of runs against the Phillies, and I'm 46 years old, but maybe because I'm a lefty, I got that little advantage. I'll throw that big sweeping overhand curve and maybe get through two innings, but there are still guys that have positive matchups that stink up the joint. I mean, it's not like Samardzija pitching against the Royals was the 27 Yankees, and the Royals scored 10. So even bad teams, the Braves, like we talked earlier, the Braves knocked around Matt Latos. The Braves shouldn't really be hitting that well. You're not going to expect much offense out of the Phillies, but to see Buchholz put up the zeros was definitely something that has gotten my attention, at least.
Now, for Buchholz, we know that he's been, just throughout his career, he's been really an up and down type of guy. So if he comes out this year and let's say, you're in an AL only league, he comes out through 10 starts, he's got an ERA that's around 2.5. Could he actually build up some trade value in those leagues?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, once you've gotten to 10 starts, again, talk to any sabermetrician, and one guy can say 10 starts is enough of a sample size to say this is for real, and another guy will say, well, it's only 10 starts. 10 starts, anybody can get lucky for 10 starts. The guy's made 150 starts in his career. You're talking about 1/15th of his whole career. So there's always two ways to look at it. But, if you look back, in 2013, which wasn't that long ago, the guy was 12-1 with a 1.74. 2010, which, yes, that's 5 years ago, was 17-7 with a 2.33. You're probably not going to reference 2010, but, if he has 10 really good starts and has a high 2, low 3 ERA, and I look to trade him, part of my trade discussion is, hey, look what he just did in 2013. Then he got hurt, and he was banged up in 2014, but he appears healthy. He's the Sox number one starter now. What do you think? And throw him into the deal, and he'd be a lot more than a throw-in at that point. He's definitely going to have sale value if he's pitching well after 7 to 10 starts.
Matt Cain was placed on the 15-day DL retroactive to April 3rd, so he's going to miss a couple starts. He's got a flexor tendon strain, and again, this is something that should keep him out for just a couple weeks, and then he should, when he comes back, he should be okay. Is there anything particular you're worried about? Does this alarm you from a guy who really had previously been, you know, kind of an iron man of that Giants rotation for nearly a decade. And now last year suffers some injury problems, as well as the last 2 years, just depleted performance. And now he's starting off the season on the DL for him again in 2015.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be concerned. Like you said, he's carried a very big workload. 31 years old now. Injuries last couple of years. You know, here he is. We're just starting the season, and he's already got a problem. You know, it's not a ligament. You know, it's the flex, like you said, the flexor tendon, which, you know, it's not a Tommy John surgery type of thing. But to me, it's likely one of those things where you put a guy in the 15-day DL, he comes off, he's throwing, he might feel it a little bit, but he's not going to say anything. He wants to help the ball club. He wants the team to win. He's going to go out there. Realistically speaking, he probably needs 30 days rest, but he's not going to get it. Because after 15 days of sitting on the shelf, you then have to take long toss. You have to throw and all these things. So to really sit for 30 days really means you miss 40 or 45. So to sit on the 15-day DL, even after 10 or 12 days, he's probably just going to first long toss. He's probably not coming off right away and starting right away. What I think the Giants should do is they have Yusmeiro Pettit. And I think he's fantastic. I think he's got terrific stuff. He was electric last year in the postseason. I think he's a guy really coming into his own. And I don't understand their desire to keep him in, you know, long relief. Now, to have a guy like that in long relief in the postseason makes complete sense, because the game is always on the line. You want to have a quick hook. If your starter doesn't have it, you want to have that guy coming in. For the regular season, your guy in long relief is pretty much a mop-up guy. You know, it's one of those things where your starter's getting bombed. Oh, let's bring in Pettit. And yes, you want to bring a really good pitcher in if you're down five runs in the third, because it is only five. So maybe if he holds the other team down, you still have five or six separate at-bats to get back in the game. But to me, you're wasting his talents. Yep. So if I were the Giants, if I ran the Giants, I would move Pettit into the rotation. And I would make sure that Kane does nothing for 2 weeks. No long toss, no soft toss, nothing for those 2 weeks. And then soft toss, and then long toss, and really give him 30, 45 days. And then you can get, perhaps, squeeze that last great season out of Matt Kane and make a run. I mean, the Dodgers are a great team. The Padres are vastly improved. You can't afford to have Matt Kane rush back and then go down for the year. You can't afford it. So to me, I would take my time with him, but that's probably not what they're going to do.
And if anybody had any doubts on Pettit's talent, let me just read off his last six starts from last year. Six innings, nine strikeouts, no walks. Four innings is a rocky start. Five strikeouts, one walk. Nine innings, zero walks, nine strikeouts, then seven innings, eight strikeouts, zero walks, five and a third, seven strikeouts, three walks, five and a third, eight strikeouts, one walk. The guy has the stuff to be a starter, and I completely agree with you. Why not plug him in there, even if just for now?
I mean, from a fantasy perspective, I only project Pettit at 103 innings. But he's still my 117th best starter. I have him right with CC Sabathia, you know, Scott Feldman on Houston.
Oh, yeah.
If this guy could get 200 innings or 175 innings, I mean, he would shoot right out. He's a strikeout an inning guy. Even if his ERA is high at 3.8, he's going to be a low whip because, like you mentioned, he doesn't walk a lot of guys. He's a valuable pitcher to the Giants, and he could be a really valuable starter. I have him. I took him in the 12-team experts NL only league. I was more than happy to wait on starting pitching, load up my offense, and grab guys like Pettit and Tanner Roark, and just hope for that day where they get, you know, bumped up into a rotation spot, and then I'll kick everybody's butt.
Right on, right on. Let's move on over to talk about the Diamondbacks, because one guy I really want to touch on is Yasmani Tomas. Now, we talked about him a little bit a couple weeks ago. But the big thing for me, the Diamondbacks sent him down, back down to the minor leagues to iron some things out. First off, when do you think we can expect Tomas in the majors? And what kind of impact do you think he can make right off the bat?
You know, to me, he's not a Yasiel Puig type of guy. You know, he's not a Cespedes type of guy. Mm-hmm. To me, he's a Mark Trumbo, but without that much power. You know, yep. He's a 250 hitter, probably a 20 home run type of guy, maybe 5 to 10 steals. So he doesn't do a tremendous amount. I had him as my 110th ranked batter coming into the year, and that was with him getting over 500 at bats, which probably isn't going to happen now. He's got a few problems. One, he fashions himself a third baseman, but he can't really catch the ball at third. He's not really a very good outfielder. They wanted him to be a third baseman, and that wasn't working out. So they're sort of bouncing him around. I think part of his spring troubles was probably the fact that he was playing third and was a little uncomfortable, or was uncomfortable about what his role was. How fast he gets back to the majors will depend a lot on Jake Lamb. I mean, if he continues to hit home runs, there's going to be no rush to bring him back to be a third baseman. Yeah. And if guys like David Peralta keep hitting home runs in the outfield, there's not going to be a rush to bring him back as an outfielder either. So really, when he comes is all on himself. If he fields well and he rakes at the minor league level, they're going to have no choice but to bring him up. But even when he comes up, to me, that's the type of guy he is. 250, 260, you know, 18 to 22 home runs, you know, plus or minus five. Anybody could have a really hot week or, you know, hit three home runs in one game in Colorado over the summer, and that skews everything. But that's the type of guy he is. He's, you know, he's not a guy that should be coming up like a Yasiel Puig and a Cespedes and suddenly automatically a top 50 hitter. That's not who he is.
I completely agree. Let's move on over to Johnny Cueto of the Cincinnati Reds. Now, this is a player who is going to be traded at some point this year, most likely right around the All-Star break. He's put up a sub-3 ERA for the last 4 years, and his strikeout rate has gotten better each and every year. He comes in on opening day, strikes out 10 in 7 innings. What can we expect from Johnny Cueto this year, being in a, you know, quote unquote contract year? He's playing for his new deal, and it's likely going to be somewhere else. What do we expect from him? You know, a guy who is, you pitched 243 innings last year. Do you let Cueto get out to a hot start and then sell high on him?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he's proven he can pitch in Cincinnati. You know, so the ballpark doesn't affect him. Like, you've quoted the numbers of the sub-3 ERA. So you don't know where he's going to end up. But you have to sort of say, all right, wherever he ends up, I'm going to get the strikeouts because that's the type of pitcher he is. If he ends up in a horrible ballpark, well, the strikeouts will always be able to allow you to keep your numbers down. The ratios may go up a bit, but chances are he's going to a contender. You know, he's not going to get traded to the Phillies, obviously. So he's going to go to a contender. So whereas you might have projected him to only win 14 games this year being on the Reds, you can project him to be a 20-game winner, you know, and win at that pace the rest of the year. To me, you know, there are the tiers of pitchers. There's Kershaw, who's in a tier of his own. Then I had, you know, King, Felix, Sale, Scherzer, Strasburg, Price, Bumgarner. Then to me, the top two guys in that next tier were Kluber and Cueto. So Cueto's a top 10 pitcher. Doesn't matter where he goes. You know, if the Yankees get desperate and he goes to Yankee Stadium, oh yeah, you know, the right-handed pitcher in Yankee Stadium, big deal. He's going to strike out everybody. And his fastball is so good that it's not like lefties are going to suddenly get around on it. You'd almost be more nervous about righties hitting him out on the short porch because they're going to be so late on his heat that they're just going to slap it the other way. And if they happen to hit it 320 feet down the line, it's a home run. But that's not a concern. Pitching in Boston, to me, again, the pesky pole, but then it gets pretty deep in right center field. That'd be a good spot for him, even though he's facing the DH. That's a good spot for him. The White Sox, I don't think the White Sox have the money at this point. So you're looking at all the teams that could possibly get him. I see no downside. He's only 29. To me, there's nothing sell high about him.
Injuries.
Unless, of course, if you were smart and you built a really deep pitching staff and all your other guys are doing well, and you can turn around and trade Cueto and a moderate outfielder and get Mike Trout, well, obviously you make that deal. But to me, he's not a sell high where you're going to sell him and try to get like a D Gordon or something like that just because you need steals. You ride that Cueto.
The main reason I bring it up is because 2014, 34 starts, 2013, 11 starts, 2012, 33, 2011, 24. And he's had a history of little ticky-tack injuries bothering him over the course of his career. That's the one thing that I worry about, especially after the 243-inning workload last year. I don't necessarily disagree with you, though, but I do think it is some food for thought. As far as thinking about selling him high, as we get a couple months into the year. Next guy, there are a couple guys I want to talk about, touch on some closer news here. Jason Greely has taken over the closer's role over in Atlanta for the time being anyways. He did notch his first save a couple days ago. Greely is a guy that you need to own right now, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But every closer needs to be owned. There's no reason for in any league a closer to be out there. You always want to have closers. And the ironic thing is, you and I have been talking about this for a couple of years now, is the death of closers. How every year it seems there's about 10 closers that lose their job because they stink or get hurt or one guy gets traded and somebody else moves into that role. So I never want to invest heavily in closers because you could always try to get those guys. And I'm always one of those fantasy owners that is pretty much in tune with who the high strikeout guys are on the teams where I think they have potential. I don't think anybody saw this one coming. So, if you were in an NL-only league, Greely was owned, because in an NL-only league, every closer and their setup man is owned. But in every mixed league, unless you were a league with 15 teams or more, I have to imagine that Greely was out there. And then the day before the season's going to start, there's a huge bidding war to go get the Braves closer now. So, Jason Greely, he's no spring chicken. I'd mentioned Jim Johnson as well. He saved 50 games a couple of times back in his heyday. Yep. So if Greely struggles, he's the next guy. I picked up Johnson in my NL-only league. Greely was obviously already owned. You hope for the best. It's not a good situation being in Atlanta. You're not going to get many runs. But to me, even the worst team is going to win 60-something games. And chances are 40 of them or so are going to be close games. So there's going to be at least 30 to 40 save opportunities for somebody in that Atlanta bullpen. So if Greeley's the guy, you have to own him.
And you took the words out of my mouth when bringing up Jim Johnson, too. Probably the next guy in line there. Now let's go over to Detroit. And Joe Nathan has been placed on the 15-day DL. He has a flexor strain. Who's the next guy in line for the saves there? Soria?
Yeah, it's definitely Soria. This injury kills me because, in my 20-team league, nobody wanted Nathan. Nobody wanted Nathan. And finally, it was like the 12th round, and I was like, okay, I have to take him. So I took him. and then he saves the game on the opening day. Four pitches. The guy threw four pitches. How the hell could you be hurt after four pitches? He got the save. He struck out Torrey Hunter. It kills me because I was going to grab Soria, too, and somebody jumped in a round too early for my liking, and they grabbed Soria, which kills me. So now I'm out a closer in a 20-team league, which stinks. One person to keep your eye on is Bruce Rondon, young kid, fireballer. If he can get his walks under control, he was banged up. He appears to be back. you know, Soria is no spring chicken. He's got plenty of miles on his arm. He's 31 years old. He's been banged up as well. I mean, he's looked great, but, you know, sort of like I'm mentioning Jim Johnson in Atlanta, Bruce Rondon is the guy in Detroit that I would have my eyes on.
Right. Rondon, certainly a guy to keep on your watch list. And yeah, is there anything else closer news that we need to touch on that we haven't?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, you've got Luke Gregerson has obviously claimed that job. They announced he's the closer. He shut down the game. Brad Boxberger, clearly the guy in Tampa Bay. Grant Balfour has been pitching in the sixth inning. I mean, he looks like he's a true middle reliever. Jake McGee's nowhere near ready. He's first tossing now, so he'll be out a month. I love Brad Boxberger. To me, he's the guy. Middle relievers, obviously, with the trade of Craig Kimbrell to San Diego, I was very high on Kevin Quackenbush this year. The fact that he's now like third or fourth and they sent him to the minors, he's droppable at this point.
Yep, and we did touch on Familia for the Mets, right?
Oh, no, you're right. We did not. Yeah, that's a similar situation. Thanks, no structural damage. So Mejia looks like he'll miss 2 weeks. It'll probably be more like three. Familia has one of those Mejia is not Greg Holland, Craig Kimbrell, Aroldis Chapman, or even going further down the list, Melanson, Rosenthal, Cody Allen, David Robertson. I almost feel like if Familia is
he might be the better pitcher.
Closer, they're not going to be in any rush to just hand the job back to Mejia. So Familia is definitely a guy with a lot of value, even in mixed leagues. This is going to be a pretty decent Mets team. It's a very good rotation, so there'll be lots of close games. Whether or not the Mets are, got that one or two run lead remains to be seen. But there's going to be plenty of save opportunities there. So he is definitely somebody. If you do weekly waivers, he's definitely somebody that I wouldn't empty the bank for, but he's certainly more than a dollar bid.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if Mejia comes back, struggles a little bit, that's a good reason to hold on to Familia for just a little bit longer than maybe you would even think. Are you ready to go over some minor league news?
Love the minor league.
All right. The first guy obviously I want to talk about is anybody surprised? The first topic here, Chris Bryant.
Who's that?
Demoted down. I shouldn't say demoted. Reassigned. Whatever. Down to the minor leagues. He's gonna spend a week and a half, 2 weeks down there before he gets called back up to the Cubs. For all the team control contract stuff, what have you. I don't think that's any discussion between us. I think the big discussion, the thing that people really want to know when he comes up in a couple weeks, and I mean, again, this is a guy that's owned in 100% of leagues. You're not going to pick him up off the waiver wire. Chris Bryant last year for the Double A Cubs team, 68 games, 297 plate appearances. He had 22 home runs, 58 RBIs, and 8 stolen bases. And then for the AAA team, the latter half of the year, another 297 plate appearances, 21 home runs, 52 RBIs, and keep in mind he had an on-base percentage of .458 and .418 respectively. What is your prediction for what we're going to see from Chris Bryant this year production-wise? I mean, that's what people want to know.
Well, the power is obviously for real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coming into the season, I had him projected with only about 375 at-bats. I thought he would miss more than the 2 weeks. I didn't think he would hit 9 home runs in spring training and make everybody have to bring him up on April 17th. But I had him for about 375 at-bats, but 26 home runs. I mean, the guy, the power is legit. The one thing that scares me and that people have ignored is his strikeout rate.
Yep.
If you mentioned all the numbers, the great on-base percentage. He walked last year at Double A and Triple A. He walked over 14% of the time. But nobody's talking about the fact that at AA, he struck out 26% of the time. And then when he got to AAA, yeah, he hit 295 because he had a 367 batting average balls in play. But he struck out over 28% of his at-bats. So you look at his plate appearance, 300 plate appearances, 21 home runs. So one out of every 10 plate appearances, he homered. Mm-hmm. But one out of every four at-bats, he whiffed. And he whiffed against guys that weren't good enough to pitch in the major leagues. So now that every day he's pitching, he's going to be facing guys that are good enough to pitch in the major leagues and who he's no longer going to surprise as this young kid who, you know, hasn't proven anything yet. He proved a little bit in the preseason. So to me, if he hits 250 or 260, I think you have to be thrilled with that. If you're expecting him to be Jose Abreu, that's not going to happen. You know, he's not going to hit 315. He may not even hit the 26 home runs that I talked about, because if he is completely overmatched, I mean, if he's striking out, let's say he strikes out 33% of the time because he's facing major league pitching. He's not going to hit those 20, you know, he might not hit those 26 home runs because this is a good Cubs team. So if he's batting two, if he's pulling a Chris Davis and he's batting 190 but still shows good power, guess what? He's going to get sent back down.
Mm.
You know, the Cubs are not stupid. Theo Epstein, you know, is a brilliant baseball mathematician. And regardless of the home runs, you know, the home runs were so 1970 and 1980. If Theo sees him hitting 195 or 210 with a 295 on base percentage, he's going to say, you know what, you're hurting us, even with the homers, and I'm sending you back down until you stop striking out. So there is that downside risk. He might be the most polarizing player in the league this year because you have some that think, you know, he's a top five third baseman right now. And then the downside is he's a triple A. Not that, oh, he's having a bad year, he's hitting 240 with a bunch of home runs. He is in the minors again.
Do you think he's ready? Would you bring him up?
I think he's ready. I think he, you know, what he did in the preseason shows it. You know, he's 23 years old. It's not like he's 19 or 20,
yeah,
like some other prospects who appear ready and get overmatched. And I remember when the Yankees had Melky Cabrera on the team at 20 years old, and there were people who were saying, "Oh my God, this guy's the worst the worst regular in all of baseball." And my response to people was, even if you're correct, he's a 20-year-old in the major leagues. And then, you know, whether you want to attribute it all to the substances that he was taking, but Melky's a pretty darn good player now.
Mm-hmm.
Bryant has had more seasoning. He's 23 years old already. You know, you don't want to wait too long. So you bring him up as soon as he's eligible on the 17th, so that you gain that extra year. You bring him up. Listen, if he struggles, you can send him down, but there's no reason to hold him down until he proves he can't handle it.
Yes, and I agree. I mean, I think that the times now, you basically have to bring him up and see what he can do against big league pitching. It's not a death wish to strike out as much as he does. It's certainly a problem. But for Cubs fans hoping that he can get that particular part of his game under control, I mean, is there much of a chance that he really can? Because we've seen guys come up to the major leagues with a high strikeout rate time and time again, and those guys never really seem to improve on it all that much. But some of them turn out all right.
Yeah, I mean, you have to take everything you know, in perspective. You look at a guy like Giancarlo Stanton. The last 2 years, he struck out over 26 and almost 28% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, his last year, he made the jump from Double A to the majors. But in Double A, he was striking out 22% of the time, but walking 18% of the time. So he was clearly a feared hitter. He was much more closely aligned in his, you know, while striking out 22% of the time is a fair amount, it's a lot more than what would be considered average, that 18% walk rate, you know, you're almost at a 1-to-1. Bryant is at 2-to-1, at 28-to-14. So there is that concern. But yeah, like you said, if he can come up and maintain what he did in the preseason, and even just maintain the levels that he was doing in the minor leagues. Stanton last year, guy hit 37 home runs. He walked 14.7% of the time and struck out 26.6. Those are pretty mirror images of what Bryant was doing at the minor league level. So if this extra year of maturity will allow him to have that same 14 versus 26 to 28 at the major league level, yeah, he could be a 270, 280 hitter with 30-something home runs, and it's great. We just don't know. You know, the first year when Stanton came up in 2010, nobody knew what to expect. But he struck out 31% of the time. Even with a 330 batting average balls in play, he only hit 259. Yes, he had 22 homers and less than 400 plate appearances. But if Chris Bryant does that, it would almost be viewed as a disappointment because so many people are so high on him.
Right.
And look at the hitter that Stanton is now. And Stanton was doing that 5 years ago as a 20-year-old.
You got that, folks? Don't overreact.
You said it, my man.
Let's move on over to Byron Buxton. Now, this is a guy that I've seen a number of people predicting that he's going to get up to the majors this year. And it's possible as the rosters expand that they put him on there. I doubt it, though. We're looking at a guy who only has three at-bats above the A level for the Twins minor league system. He had an injury riddled last year. He only played in 34 games before getting shut down at the end. Buxton is a guy who has all the tools. We've got some power. We've got some speed. He can field. He's got a decent eye. Last year, because we've got a decent sample size, I'll go off of it. Between the A leagues for the Twins in 68 and 57 games respectively, he had about a 13% walk rate. Buxton looks good, but we've got to wait a whole other year to see him. What are you projecting as far as Buxton goes for what his ceiling is and what you're expecting him to do?
You know, I haven't seen him play, and even if I had, I certainly wouldn't put myself in the category of the guys from Baseball America and Baseball Prospectus and all these ranking organizations that make him number one. I look at the stats, and I'm looking at a guy that, yes, he had at high A ball in 2013. He had a 404 batting average balls in play, which led to his 326 batting average. But he had four homers, he had 23 steals. He struck out 19% of the time at high A ball. And now, granted, he was a 20-year-old at the time, or 19 maybe.
Yeah, 20 or 19.
But, I mean, you look at him last year, he hit 240 at high A ball with only 134 plate appearances. He had three plate appearances in double A. What's the rush? If the Cubs want to hold Chris Bryant down for an extra couple of weeks to save a year's eligibility on him when they're a team that's ready to win now, why the hell would the lousy Minnesota Twins want to rush this guy? Like you said, he had one game at double A last year. One. He had three plate appearances in one game, and he got no hits. And guess what? He struck out in all of his at-bats. He has 100% K rate. 21 years old, I would make him start at double A. I would make him rake at double A. Then I would put him at triple A. And if he's raking at triple A, then I would make him a September call-up because that still won't start his service time, really. What? I don't get the rush. To me, if you're holding on to Byron Buxton, even in an AL-only league, if it's a non-keeper league, to me, you're wasting a roster spot.
Right on. Spot on. Let's move on over to another top prospect that had his season cut short last year thanks to injury. That's Carlos Correa for the Houston Astros, for now, shortstop of the Houston Astros. Last year, 62 games, 293 plate appearances. He had 6 homers, 20 stolen bases, 57 RBIs. He hit .325 with a .416 on-base percentage and a .510 slugging. Struck out 15% of the time, walked 12% of the time. Correa looks like quite the talent. I mean, this is a player that we're going to be waiting a couple years to see. But people were skeptical a couple years ago when he was taken, or 2-3 years ago when he was taken as the top pick of the draft. This was viewed as a long shot. This was viewed as quite a risk just because he was so young. He was 17, I think, when he was drafted. But he's starting to come into his own, and he has been tearing up minor league pitching the last couple years. It's starting to look like they've nailed on that number one pick. Again, we're waiting a couple more years, but what have you liked out of Correa so far, or disliked, for that matter?
I've liked everything that I've seen, everything that I've read. You look at the numbers, and people will say, oh, well, you know, he only had 6 home runs last year. Well, it was only 62 games. 293 plate appearances. So let's double it for 600 plate appearances. He's 12 home runs. All right, you get 12 home runs. He stole 20 bases. If you get 12 home runs and 40 stolen bases from your shortstop, yeah, that's a top five. That's a guy who goes, you know, that next year it's Trout, McCutchen, Goldschmidt, Miggy, Correa. I mean, they're all in that same sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, some of the numbers you touched on, walking 12% of the time and only striking out 15% of the time. You know, oh, you only have 6 home runs. Stop. One of the things people got to stop looking at is home runs. The guy had a 510 slugging percentage. That means there's a lot of doubles and triples in there.
Yep.
And, you know, when you're a 20-year-old who's 6'4", 190 pounds, well, when you're 22 and you're 195 or 198 pounds, you get on that weight program and a legit program. He can be a 6'4", 205, completely natural, easily, by next year. He's at high A ball at 20 years old and killing it.
Yep.
You know, this is a guy I'm excited about. This is, you know,
this is a team you can start getting excited about in the Astros.
Yeah, I mean, they got a lot of young players. You know, you picture a lineup with Springer and Correa, you know, and you got Keuchel and there's a lot to like,
yep,
in Houston these days. And this guy, he looks like the real deal. And, you know, I hate to compare him to a cheater like Alex Rodriguez. But at 20 years old, to be 6'4", 190, he could be 210, 215 when he really fills out. That 5'10 slugging, those, you know, we could be legitimately looking at a 30-30 player, depending on how he wants to perform and how he wants his body to be, and how that weight might affect his defense. That's one of the considerations. He has that type of ability. He could be a 30-30 player from everything that I see and everything that I read. At the very least, he could be a 15-35, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, crazy good. Crazy good. John, it has been a pleasure to do this with you each week, and yet again, an hour has just flown by. Before we get out of here, give me a parting shot. Anything you wanna pimp out, let me know. Or let the listeners know.
Yeah, I mean, guys, we've got great articles going out every day. Brandon Berg, my co-host here, put out his minor league report yesterday. It's only going to get bigger. It's only going to get better. Mm-hmm. We still have our rankings up there. You can get an idea of how we still like players. You can reach me on Twitter at RotisGuru. You look me up on Facebook. Friend me on Facebook, John Stolberg. We're always available. If you have questions, I'm getting people tweeting me, what do you think about this guy? You know, I'm in an NL-only league. Should I pick up this guy? And, you know, we're same-day responding, giving you the advice that you need mm-hmm. to help you win a championship.
Ryan, you heard the man. Head over to fflockerroom.com for any fantasy baseball news you need. Hit him on Twitter at RotisGuru. Hit me at FantasyGuideline without the E in the end. And, of course, give a follow to at fflockerroom. You can find anything you need there. And until next week, you know, we'll be back in the same place. But until then, you guys have a good one.